Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown 2018 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead.
All right. Thanks so much, Leanne, and thanks, everybody, for joining us today. It's a very special week, of course, as we await Justify's attempt at becoming perhaps racing's 13th Triple Crown winner. Most of you probably saw by now Justify put in his final pre-Belmont work this morning, officially timed as 5/8 and 101/2. And then as the rest of the week goes on, tomorrow night we've got the Belmont post-draw at Citi Field before the Mets-Orioles game. And then Wednesday, Justify will ship to New York with the other Churchill Downs-based horses. Thursday kicks off live racing at Belmont with 3 stakes that day. 2 of those are graded. And then 5 stakes on Friday, including through 3 grade 2s. And then, of course, the blockbuster Belmont Day Card, which annually is probably the best racing program in the U.S. outside the Breeders' Cup, with 10 stakes, 9 of them graded, 6 of those grade 1s. And all of those 18 stakes races over those 3 days make up what we now know as the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. But we're here, of course, to talk about the main event. Anytime we've got a Triple Crown on the line, it's nice to remember the past winners, not only for their great stories, but also to see if we can glean any information that might help us to decide for ourselves if Justify is up to the test of the champion. Every Triple Crown try is its own saga, but the continuity of the series and the conditions also makes it fun to compare and remember what came before. So today we're delighted to welcome some of the connections of each of the past 4 Triple Crown winners, and as a way of keeping it organized, we're going to go with jockeys first, and then Billy Turner, who's the one living Triple Crown winning trainer not named Bob Baffert. And then we'll talk to the owners. So hopefully you saw in the media alert, not everyone we reached out to is able to join us today. However, the Hills, who co-owned Seattle SLU, and Patrice Wolfson, who bred and owned Affirmed with her late husband, Lewis, they both will be at the Belmont on Saturday and asked me to pass along that they welcome any interviews. So if any of you want to get in touch with those folks, just let me know and I can pass along their info. But now we're going to welcome in 2 of the 4 living Triple Crown jockeys. We were unable to reach Jean Kruger, and then we're going to try and reach Steve Cawthon shortly. He's playing in a charity golf tournament today, so we're going to try and catch him just for a few minutes after we talk to these 2 guys. But we've got 2 Hall of Famers, hopefully, to kick it off. Ron Turcotte, who won each of the Triple Crown races twice, and, of course, swept the series in 1973 aboard Secretariat, breaking a 25-year Triple Crown drought. Ron Turcotte, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
We're so happy to have you here. And we've also got Victor Espinoza, who won a Triple Crown on his 3rd attempt 3 years ago with American Pharoah, breaking a 37-year drought. Victor, thanks for being on.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
Oh, absolutely. It's so nice. It's so nice to have both of you guys on and just relive, some really incredible races and amazing times. Ron, I'd like to start with you. Maybe before we talk about the Belmont and the Triple Crown, can you just fill us in on where you're at and how you're doing these days?
Okay, I live in New Brunswick, Canada, right across the border from Maine.
Excellent, excellent. And have you been watching the Triple Crown races, and do you have any opinions on Justify and his chances in the Belmont?
Yes, I think he's a very good horse. I mean, he's undefeated, and he's the only one with a chance. So, but he's got all the makings of a good horse. He's a well-built horse, a long horse. Quite a big horse, quite tall, and he's got a nice long straight. Very fitting to go far.
Absolutely,
I really love his chances. I mean,
excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. We would love to see him win on Saturday. Victor, of course, has seen Justify plenty, both over the winter and riding against him. Victor, you rode Pharaoh for the same barn. Do you think Justify and Mike Smith can get it done on Saturday?
It looks like. I mean, Odo is, you know, Belmont is really demanding track, you know, for any horse that goes for the Triple Crown. But, I mean, Justified, he's undefeated. He's been winning every race, and doesn't matter how easy or how close the race you don't win, but win is a win. And when the horses have that confidence, he always, you know, be the best in the race, it's hard for the horse to, you know, to get beat. The only thing is, like I said, the Belmont is quite the main track for every Triple Crown horse.
Yeah, it's a demanding surface and also the distance of the race. You know, having been in this position three times and riding in the race other times, what can you tell us about riding a mile and a half at Belmont? It's not a distance you ride very often, and like you said, it's a demanding track. What have you learned about that race and the way that the pace unfolds?
I learned that I had to ride that race like it's any other distance. You know, sometimes they can be a little confused and think about it as a mile and a half, but you know. My best rides, I just ride like it was just a mile and an eighth. And the horses, it will run exactly the same as it was, you know, run a mile and an eighth instead of a mile and a half. It's really, I think it's more like, you know, you think it in back of your mind that, you know, I have to go slow, or I cannot wait too long, or I have to, like, you know, go easy with him out of the gate. But, that's why it gets a little bit confusing for me.
Yeah.
When I ride those mile and a half, I just, you know, ride the same like it was just mile and eight.
Excuse me for interfering. Right. Excuse me for interfering.
Yes, no, please.
I disagree with Victor about being a tough race. It is, in my opinion, and I rode in New York when we had a lot of mile and a half race, and I think that the Belmont is the easiest one of the three.
And can you elaborate on that? Why is that?
Why is that? Because there's many chances to overcome different things. You might get squeezed, you might get shut off, you might stumble at the start. Anything can happen, and there's time to recover without rushing your horse to make it up real quick. There's so many ways. If the horse is trained right, I think I really believe that I won two of them back to back, and I got beat on one, which was Tom Ralph, and that was my fault. I moved a little too soon with him. So I really believe that. You see, we won the Belmont, the Derby pretty easy with River Ridge. We came back and the horse didn't like mud in the Preakness, but we came back and the race was real hard on him, the Preakness, but we came back and got the horse ready to run a mile and a half after that hard race. And we trained pretty hard in between, and he still won Gallup race, won by 7 lengths. And the other one was 31 lengths.
Ron, all these horses that we're talking about today, both the Triple Crown winners and Riva Ridge, they all dominated the race, essentially being on the lead by the first turn and just widening. What are your thoughts on the way that the Belmont tends to be run, both pace-wise and what sort of position a horse like Justify should be in to maximize his chances in this race?
Well, I think he's a very versatile horse. Just looking on the television, just watching him running, this is on the screen. I mean, I never seen him live, but he seems to be a very quiet horse, very calm horse, going to the post, and he seems to be a very manageable horse that you can play just about anywhere you want to. So I can't see no problem with him. I don't see where he should have any problem. He can take the lead and control the race, or he can lay back and let somebody else kill each other and pick him up.
Yeah. Well, if you guys can hang on for a second, I'm going to see if the media on the call have questions for you, so Leanne, the operator, can see who's in the queue.
And we'll go ahead and take our first question from Charles Walker with the Baltimore Sun.
This is a question for both of you. I guess which qualities do you most admire about Mike Smith as a rider, and what do you make of the fact that he's able to ride so successfully at age 52?
What is the problem?
Ron, do you want to take that first?
Okay.
He was asking, what do you admire about Mike Smith?
Well, I admire the way he keeps himself fit, and he's every individual is different. I mean, some people can do a lot of work in the morning and they keep himself real fit that way, and others might not get on as many horses in the morning and go to the gym. But regardless, he's real fit, and I've seen John Longdon run at 60 years old, and Pat Renoir rode at 60 years old, and they were real fit, and they were good. So I guess if you keep yourself in shape, you go a long way, unless you have an accident this week.
Of course. Victor, how about you? Thoughts on Mike Smith?
Well, I admire him because, and he's aged and he's still riding pretty good, but I am better jockey than him, I'll be honest. But I mean, I wish I could ride in his age. Come on, it's like, wow. I admire him in these ages still. You know, right as good as he's been riding. I mean, listen, when you have a good horse, it's like justified. You know, they make you feel, they make you look good too. But,
well, that's for sure.
You know, it required to ride an incredible horse like any Triple Crown race or horse or like justified too. It helps too, but, like I say, yeah, and I wish I will, someday I can write, and, you know, when I get to that age, you know, I am more admired to all this, you know, like, you know, Mike Smith and his, you know, and his career, and like I say, and his age is still writing right now. It's impressive.
Absolutely. Leanne?
And as a reminder, it is star one if you would like to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Pat Forty with Yahoo Sports.
Hi, guys. For both jockeys, I was going to actually ask the exact same question that Childs asked, but I will ask this. What was it like dealing with the pressure leading up to the race of riding for a Triple Crown?
Go ahead, Victor. I was first last time.
Victor, you want to go first, talking about the pressure?
Sure, why not? I mean, it is quite the experience. It is a lot of pressure to go to the Triple Crown. I mean, at least for me, because, you know, it would not happen for so long, for so many years. And, you know, everyone asks the same question, if ever it's going to happen again. And it's the times that I can tell you that I last sleep few nights before I got to the Triple Crown. But I just want to get it done. Honestly, like, those last 2 days, it took forever to get there. You know, you count the days, you count the hours, and then you count the minutes. And it's just not easy, but, you know, it's always in my mind that, like, I'm just so thankful and happy just to be in that position and known, you know, to have all that pressure, you know, to go to the Triple Crown. It's and the way is that I think back, it's just an amazing feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take our next question from Louisa Barton with Fox Sports Ocala.
Yes, thank you. Question for Steve is, how much does a jockey worry or get concerned about letting down a great horse like Justify, for example, making a mistake and it costing the horse the race?
I don't know if Steve is on.
Are you there, Steve?
No, Steve, not on yet.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I can direct this to one of the others then, maybe to Ron. How much a jockey is concerned or worried about letting, you know, a great horse down, you know, when it comes to the race, and whether they make a mistake, they feel maybe cost the horse the race.
Well, in my case, I knew the horse like a book. I was in every one of his workout, and he was coming up to the race. And I'll go back to the first question that was asked about that, about how nervous you are for the race and that. And I wasn't overly nervous because I kept myself busy. I rode every race, pretty well every race that day, and I didn't have time to worry. And the other thing is that I knew my horse was real fit, was ready to go the distance, and I could place him wherever I wanted to because I had started schooling him over a year before that.
So very confident.
Yes.
And then I have to ask Victor this question. Victor, I got to ask you about your last statement. What makes you say you're a better jockey than Mike Smith, and what do you think makes a better jockey?
Hey, I had to think that, right? As long as I'm right and I had to think, I'm better than him. I'm better than all the jockeys, right? No, I mean, it is always fun to, you know, to go up there and compete with all these, you know, guys in there and, you know, trying to beat in any race as possible and have that confidence to, you know, knowing to think that I'm better than all of them. You know, yeah, I have to because, you know, I want to beat him. I want to win too.
Well, and that's one thing that we all have in common that, every time we go out there, we have to think that we're as good as any jockey and better than most.
That's right, and like I say, I'm sure the Ron when in his day when he was riding, I am sure you will think the same that you're best, you're better than all the jockeys, and you'll be best, and you're gonna beat them in every race, right?
Yes, like I just said.
Yep.
You have to think that you're as good as anybody and better than most.
Right.
And with horses like American Pharoah and Secretariat, it's pretty easy to feel that way, I'm sure. Thank you both. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you guys for having me and your show.
I think we got a few more if you have time, Victor.
Sure.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
All right. Leanne?
And as a reminder, it is star one if you would like to ask a question. Our next question comes from John White with Santa Anita.
Thank you. This is for Ron Turcotte. Ron, this morning Justify had his final workout for the Belmont Stakes, 5 furlongs. Secretariat's final workout before the Belmont Stakes was a mile at Belmont Park of 134 and change, 134 and 4/5. you were on him for that workout. What do you remember about that mile workout for Secretariat before he won the Belmont by 31 lengths?
He was working. He worked a very good mile that morning, and I let him gallop out in about 1:08 and 1:50. Excuse me, 1:48. And he done it so easy, and that reinforced my confidence in him. Came back and I ate good, and that evening he ate good the same.
And Riva Ridge in the Preakness, I always wonder what would have happened if the track had not been wet that day. What did he feel like under you in the Preakness before he bounced back and won the Belmont so impressively?
Oh, he felt great coming into the race. It's just that the sky opened up in the evening, started at night, Friday night, and it rained all night and all day. And but the horse, physically, he was very good. He was right up to the race, but he just could not stand up in the mud. He could not run in the mud or the slop or the grass.
So when you left, I mean, how quickly after you left the gate, when did you know that you were in trouble?
Well, I thought I was in trouble when I saw that rain, because he wouldn't even work good in the mud. He was top heavy, like he was big on top. And narrower in front, compared to Secretariat, who was very broad in front, and wide, like a wide track, and that would give him much more balance. But
one final question, Ron. How did you feel when Secretariat finally, after so many years, got the credit he deserved for the time that he actually ran in the Preakness Stakes?
Well, I'll tell you, that was very satisfying. I mean, we knew we had the track record anyway, and the newspaper did, and it's just that Chick Lang, who was managing the racetrack, pushed his people, the owner, into getting the Teletimer company to put their I don't know. I'm not going to say that he took any money for it, but, I mean, he stuck with them, and they wouldn't let us have the record. But they knew we had the record.
Well, thank you, Ron, and thank you for the memories that you and Secretariat provided us, especially through that Triple Crown, but throughout Secretariat's career. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
And everyone, if I could just jump in for a minute, I'd like to introduce Steve Coffin. He's joined us now from a charity golf tournament, our third Hall of Fame jockey joining us on this call. Steve was only 18 when he won the 1978 Triple Crown on a farm. Steve, thanks for jumping on with us.
Good to be here.
How's your golf game?
Luckily we got a couple of really good golfers with him, so I'm taking this hole off. it's reasonable, I guess, is all I can say.
Very good. Well, we'll try to be quick since you're busy, but just to catch you up, we're talking with Victor and Ron Turcotte about Triple Crown's past, and I'd love if you could just try to put into context for us what winning a Triple Crown meant for you, your career, and now looking back on it 40 years later.
You know, obviously it was just the greatest thing to be a part of, and you know, the whole thing from really riding the firm as a 2-year-old against Aladar, you know, we had a great rivalry. You know, there was great characters involved. Obviously Laz was, you know, the ultimate character in racing, and you know, obviously a wonderful trainer, but you know, just had he just seemed to, all during the Triple Crown, capture everybody's, you know, imagination just with all his stories and, you know, the way, you know, his Latin flair. And
sure.
The Wolfsons, obviously, were, you know, they were a great part of it. You know, it was just it was so wonderful to be a part of it, and then to finish, you know, the Triple Crown off and with a race like the Belmont was that year was, you know, just probably, you know, my proudest moment in racing.
Well, we were talking a few minutes ago about the pressure of riding in a Belmont, and I'd just like to ask you the same. What was it like, and did being so young perhaps help you in a way dealing with it?
Well, you know, I didn't really feel a lot of pressure going into the Derby. I was just glad to be there, and obviously, we, you know, after winning that, I really, you know, didn't feel a great deal of pressure, you know. It wasn't so bad going into the Preakness, but after the Preakness, for me, I think it was, you know, probably the longest 3 weeks of my riding career because, you know, having won the first two, you have a chance to do something, you know, unique, and I didn't want to, you know, make a mistake, and I didn't want to, you know, let everybody down, so it was, I think, you know, probably quite a bit of self-inflicted pressure, but it did start to, you know, aggravate me a little bit. I was trying to do my best to just keep focused. And then, you know, finally when we got to it, you know, on Belmont Day, it wasn't so bad. I was just focused on, you know, trying to, you know, get the horse out of the gate in good order and, you know, do what I had to do. But
right.
The 3 weeks in between were kind of, seemed like a long time.
Well, Steve, we don't want to impose, but do you have a time for a couple quick questions from the media?
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
I'm good.
There we go. If we can bring the other riders back in, if anyone has questions for any three of these gentlemen, Ron and Victor are both still on the line, too.
Okay.
Leanne?
And as a reminder, that is *1 if you would like to ask a question. Our next question comes from Charles Walker with the Baltimore Sun.
Yeah, hey, this is specifically for Steve. Obviously, this year with Justify, he and Mike Smith will be trying to win the Triple Crown, and it's only been 3 years since the last one. And you were in that position where C.L. Slew had won the year before and Secretariat had won 4 years earlier. Did you feel the fact that there had been recent Triple Crown winners changed the experience for you at all? I mean, did it take any pressure off or make the achievement any less weighty? Or I mean, what did you kind of make of it in that context?
No, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't, you know, I didn't get any credit for winning the Triple Crown with Seattle Slew or Secretariat. So the only one I had the chance to do it with was Affirmed. So that was all I was focused on. And, yeah, I didn't, the fact that it had happened, you know, recently didn't mean anything to me. But after I won it, I remember how everybody was saying how easy it was to do. They better make it easier or make it harder. And that was after about 37 years, it started to get funny.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, maybe, I think maybe a good place to wrap up with all three of you, if you don't mind, is we haven't really dug into the stretch run of the Belmonts that you won and what it felt like. So Steve, since you have to go, maybe we'll start with you, but what stands out in your memory? Can you just talk about the stretch duel that you were engaged in and even getting headed a little bit in the stretch? What do you remember about your Belmont win?
Well, I just remember going into the race. Obviously, you know, our race was really a two-horse race, but you know, there was Darby Creek Road was the only horse that kind of had shown any proven form. The other two were kind of, you know, hoping, you know, just hopeful to maybe hit the board or run third or fourth. The race obviously developed. And we got to the head of the stretch, and I could feel a little, you know, my horse was starting to feel a little bit of heat under me, and I could tell that he was struggling, and Aladar was breathing right down our neck, and it was about the 3/16 pole when I switched sticks and hit him left-handed for the first time. Not because of you know, it wasn't any, you know, great decision or anything other than I knew I had to do something, you know, and, you know, when I did, he did respond immediately almost and kind of got back, you know, got his nose back in front. And, you know, from that point on, it was just him, you know, willing himself to the wire, you know, willing to beat the horse. I knew, you know, at that point that I felt like Alizar wasn't going to get by me at that point.
Fantastic. Steve, we really appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to your match, but appreciate you taking the time to jump on with us real quick.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
And, Ron, now I'll come to you with the same question. I'm sure you've been asked it a million times in your life, but we still want to hear it from you now once again. Just take us through, you know, the last half mile of the Belmont, and you were pretty much in another zip code already, but what do you remember when you relive it in your mind?
Well, he was running like about the same way he had been working for the race. And when you work a horse out, you always try to finish a little faster. And in my case, I didn't even have to run faster the last part, but he was running as easy on the backside as he had been working. So I was very, very confident.
And then can you take us through the rest of it?
Well, as we turned for home, about the quarter pole, I turned around. You know, he kept calling me that far in front, and, well, I had to turn around, and my curiosity got the best of me. I had to turn around and take a look what it looked like that far in front. I had to look across the turn, you know, across the track.
And what did you see?
I saw that they were running a long way behind, and they were driving, and they weren't making up no ground. So confident.
Oh, man. Well, Ron, thank you so much for the memories today. Victor, now I want to hear from you of just your memories of, you know, the last eighth of a mile or so after you put Frosted away. What was going through your mind as you were coming to the wire in the Belmont?
Oh, those memories I will never forget. You know, it's just one thing that, you know, you always think about it, that, you know, come down the stretch, you know, I have no competition. American Pharoah, he was just, you know, much the best, and he was just, you know, stretching his body as, like, so far that the wire, it seems like he's coming, you know, he's coming pretty quick. And those moments that know that you're winning the Triple Crown is, you know, you never forget.
Were you aware of the crowd and the eruption that was unfolding there as you came to the wire?
Absolutely. I didn't hear it. Honestly, I don't even, like, it's just like hear like an echo in there. I remember that, you know, a little bit before crossed the wire, I just hear like an echo. So many people there were, you know, rooting for him. I was screaming that I was pretty much winning with the Triple Crown with American Pharoah.
That is so cool. Well, Victor, thanks for joining us today and reliving these memories, and we'll hope to see you on another great 3-year-old soon enough.
Hope so. Have a good day, guys.
All right, Victor Espinoza, Ron Turcotte, thanks again for joining us. We'll hope to talk to you all again very soon.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, and now we're happy to check in with Billy Turner, who was the trainer of Seattle Slew, who, like Justify, was undefeated coming into the Belmont. And not only that, he had won all 8 of his starts without any serious challenge. Billy, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Well, we're so glad to have you on. Maybe a good place to start is just, I know you watch the races pretty carefully. What are your impressions of Justify?
Well, he's done everything right. You can't fault him. He's a big horse. I haven't seen the horse personally, but I understand he's a big horse. And maybe one of the reasons that he was a little later getting started in his career, but he just seems to improve with every race. So he's a formidable horse.
And we were talking with the jockeys about being under the microscope leading up to the Belmont. And I mean, Seattle Slough was so popular, it's almost hard to fathom it now. But like, what was the pressure and the media attention like for you, and how did you handle all that?
Well, the thing is, Slough benefited from Secretariat's bringing back the Triple Crown as a major sporting event, and so Secretariat was the king, outstanding. And then here, 4 years later, along comes Seattle Slough, and he wins the he has an undefeated two-year-old career, and but only three starts, but he runs the fastest mile that a two-year-old had ever run in this country, and when he won the Champagne. And so that that set him, so showed that he had speed with to burn, and he could go a distance of ground and so forth. So he was a threat to Secretariat as being the king, and that created a fan base that you wouldn't believe, because you had the defenders of Secretariat, and you had the fans of Seattle Slough, and they were avid fans. And of course, there were more newspapers covered that Triple Crown than any time in history. And so you had reporters from everywhere, and not only that, but you had the media was in it big time, and so it was a crush from the early I'd say the end of January, and when he was at Hialeah, until after the Belmont, after the Saratoga, his 3-year-old year, it was unbelievable the amount of, there were photographers, there were reporters from the littlest newspaper in the country, and things like that, and magazines, so it was exciting. It was very tiresome for me, because I had to answer questions and so forth, and so it was something.
I mean, do you think it has any effect on the horse? I mean, as the winds pile up and more people are coming around the barn and want to take his photo and are there to see him all the time, I mean,
In Slough's case, it did, because he fed off the crowds. He was sensitive to the energy of a crowd, and it just turned him on. Well, it's sort of like battle fatigue. You can only be turned on so much for so long, and then your adrenals burn out and and you crash. So at the end of the Triple Crown races, Slough was mentally tired, but physically he was in very good shape. He was sound and in every way and so forth, and he wanted to train and all that kind of stuff, but you're battle fatigued. That's why customarily the old timers after the Belmont, they'd give their horse some time and wouldn't run back before the Traverse at Saratoga or something like that.
But you did.
Well, they put on a new race in California called the Swapstakes, and that was something that I never heard of or even thought about. But it was put on by a large effort to bring the horse out there, and she got the job done.
That's for sure. Well, Billy, hang on, and I'm going to check with the media. I think we have a question here for you. Leanne?
And as a reminder, that is star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from Child Walker with the Baltimore Sun.
Oh,
hi. Yeah,
how are you?
I'm doing well, Billy. How are you?
Just fine.
Good. I'm just interested, based on what you just said about Seattle Slough and Secretariat, if Justify to win on Saturday, do you think that his Triple Crown would be any less momentous because American Pharoah did it 3 years ago, or do you think he would be able to sort of build on what Pharoah did, much like you said Slough did with Secretariat?
I don't think we are dealing with quite the same situation as far as the media and press coverage isn't quite the same today that it was then, and so you don't get the world crowd in it the way it was back in Slough's day and Secretariat's day. We need you guys in the press rooms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Billy, before we let you go, can you? I know you retired from training a couple years ago. Can you just bring us up to speed on how you're doing and what you're up to?
Well, I'm a farmer down here at the Ocala Jockey Club in just north of Ocala, and I've retired after 50 years on the New York, Miami, Saratoga circuit.
Sounds pretty good. All right. Well, Billy, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate the memories, and hopefully we'll talk to you often in the next few years. It would be great if this keeps happening.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much, Billy Turner, trainer of Seattle Slough. And with that, we get to move on to our owners now. And we're delighted.
Oh no,
I think he's already disconnected. Let me check real quick.
I was just going to say hello to him and wish him happy memories.
Oh, Bill, I think Billy is still on. Billy, are you there?
I'm still here.
All right, Ms. Taylor wanted to say hi.
I appreciate that.
I just wanted to wish you every happiness and all the wonderful memories we have together.
Oh gosh, well I'm glad that you spoke up because I miss you dearly.
You too.
She doesn't have a problem speaking up.
Love you, Billy.
Take care.
God bless you.
Oh, that was a very nice moment there between Karen Taylor and Billy Turner. Karen is online now with their husband Mickey, and we appreciate you all coming on with us.
Well, thank you very much. It's a very special week in New York.
It is indeed, and I'd also like to welcome the owner of American Pharoah, Ahmed Zayat. Mr. Zayat, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Well, this has been such a treat talking to the jockeys and to and to Billy Turner, and now to share more memories with you all. You know, Karen and Mickey, which either one of you would like to speak first, I'd just like to ask you if you can kind of remind everybody what a sensation Seattle SLU was. We talked to Billy about it a little bit and the attention that he got, but as dominant as he was going into the Triple Crown, what was it like for you all, that whole experience?
Well, one thing, you know, he raced three times as a two-year-old in New York, and he ran the fastest mile to this day that was ever ran by a two-year-old. So, you know, he was a New Yorker. All of his races were in New York. And through the Triple Crown, you know, everything went, you know, according to plan. Basically until about, the night before the Belmont when it started to rain. And that changed, you know, we thought we were going to have a fast track, and we ended up having a quagmire. But anyhow, that's what I remember of it.
I remember that he was home at Barn 54, and he loved to run at Belmont Park, and he was so powerful on the racetrack there, and even just galloping in the morning with Mike Kennedy, and he just had so much fun training there. And when it came up muddy, we knew we had the horse, but you knew that you had to have a lot of racing luck, and everything had to go right. But then he was late to the paddock, and we didn't have cell phones then, and that got to be a little bit of a worry. We wondered where he was, but Flew kind of always did everything his way, you know. He was very dominant, and he had a determination to do things however he wanted to do them, and so who knew how he wanted to get there, but he knew he was going to get there eventually, and when he did, he got in that paddock and did his war dance that he always did, and he kind of put some fear in other horses. I mean, he was like Muhammad Ali. He'd kind of dance around and not have 2 feet on the ground, and he just was looking at all his fans and being the New Yorker that he was, and he definitely was a New Yorker, and he just had a wonderful experience always there, and he was, as I said, we just were hoping for a good racetrack and a good racing line.
It sounds like you had plenty of reason to be confident, though.
Yeah, well, until with the mud, you made a completely different situation. Cruguet and Turner and I went out on the clubhouse turn. They only run two races a year going a mile and a half, and where you – all the tractors turn off the racetrack in the first turn. We went out there, and I wear cowboy boots, and halfway, pertinent to the top of my cowboy boots, except for one little path, it was pertinent knee deep in mud because the first turn was horrible. About Cruguet found it before anyone. About the fourth path off the rail, there was kind of it was probably about 6 or 7 feet wide where the tractors packed it down, where it was, you know, not so deep. And inside from that hump to the rail was nothing but slop. But then on the outside, it was knee-deep mud. And that concerned it.
That is pretty fascinating stuff. I do want to welcome in Mr. Zayat, who has actually been listening to this entire call. I just want to let everybody know that he asked to listen to the entire thing for his own enjoyment and pleasure. So I think that is pretty cool. Mr. Zayat, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. You have no idea how much I enjoyed listening to these wonderful athletes and this incredible memory. And then you start really appreciating even more, you know, have been 3 years since American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, and you keep pinching yourself. Did it really happen? Have we really brought a Triple Crown winner? And listening to the memoirs and how special, and the group of 12 elite athletes that have given a lot of pleasure to all of us as horse owners and fans to the sport, just makes you sit with tremendous gratitude and just pleasure. I can listen for hours for people who have done something really special.
Well, the stories are endless. I could listen for hours as well. I'd like to hear from you what you remember specifically about this week three years ago, leading up to the Belmont, the hype, the last work at Churchill Downs, and then shipping up, and everything that you dealt with that week.
It was an incredible week that will live forever in my memory, and my kids, and my family, our friends, I think the entire racing community, just because it had been such a long time, for 37 years, between the last Triple Crown winner to American Pharoah, and it kind of made us doubt ourselves. Is it really ever going to be happen? Have the horses become too fragile that they cannot sustain such a campaign? People have been questioning, do we need to change the regimen, the timing, the spacing between the racing? Are we making them that strong? We kind of lost hope, and here it comes, the moment that we've been waiting for 37 years, and having a horse with the persona, actually what made American Pharoah. I mean, we can hear about Seattle Slough and Secretariat and all great, unbelievable athletes. For me, what made American Pharoah the special to me, he is his persona, his personality.
Hmm.
He was able to relate to any person or anyone around him. He was incredibly intelligent animal, incredibly powerful, sheer beauty. His motion, the way he moved, the way he breathed was breathtaking. He literally floated over the ground, but what made him really, really is his sweetness. I can lay in this, you know, in this stall with him, 1,200-pound animal, not even wide a bit, that he's all over me. You can put a toddler in front of him, a two-year-old kid, or somebody who has a special need, and he will be very cognizant and know his environment. He was an incredible, incredible athlete that did not act with arrogance, but had tremendous grace. If I can talk to him like a person, but he had a huge heart and incredible athleticism.
God, it was such an amazing time, and it's really fun to listen to you wax poetic about him. To shift topics a little bit, though, I'm curious what all of you on the call think of Justify, and I'll start with the Taylors watching from afar. What are your impressions of this horse going for a Belmont win?
Well, if he wins, Slew would end up being the first undefeated Triple Crown winner. One thing, it would be nice for him to win, and there's six other horses that they have Seattle Slew blood in them, like his great-great-grand on his dam side, his great-great grandsire is Slew, and you know, it's AP Indian then Slew. So, you know, that would be nice. You'd have another Triple Crown winner that has Slew blood in it. And also Hofburg is, there's seven of the runners that's got Slew blood in them, but Hofburg has Slew blood on the top and, you know, on the sire side and the dam side, which make them inbred to AP Indian Slew four times four or five times five. So if any of those seven win, it would be kind of nice to have Slew blood. And if Justify can get it done, you know, it's a tall order to come from, to run around Big Sandy, you know, like American Pharoah came from Arkansas to the Derby and to the Preakness, and Justify came from California, and he's never been in Belmont Park, and once around Big Sandy, you know, is a long ways. It's he hasn't been, you know, that far, but none of them's been that far. But it'll be interesting. If it rains, then everything changes. Then you end up not with it won't be a sloppy track. If you get any water in Belmont at all, it turns into mud.
Yeah.
Especially the first turn. And the first turn, you know, then that'll change the race. So, but, you know, hopefully he can get it done, or one of the other six Slews get it done. Thank you.
Mr. Zayat, you've seen Justify plenty and raced against him. Your impressions?
He's an absolutely special athlete. He is an incredible, gorgeous, unbelievable-looking horse. He's just majestic. He's over 1,200, I think, 70-something pounds. You wouldn't know it seeing the way he moved. He's incredibly athletic. I believe that he's incredibly talented. I think that he have done things that wowed the hell out of me. Going the Derby, the way he won it, going, you know, on his fourth start for a horse going a mile and a quarter for the first time, being totally pushed in the mud at 45 and keep digging and finding the heart. I think he is an incredible athlete. We have seen what have happened to him in the Preakness. I do believe and hope and pray that he will be the 13th Triple Crown winner. I think the sports need it. We all need to continue having star. Sport without a star is not a sport. I believe in his trainer. I believe in his connection. He's doing everything right. He looks incredibly healthy and keeping his weight. I think the most important thing that I've learned going through the Triple Crown from Bob Baffert was weight condition. He is possessed and pretty about that point, and you know, about his condition, and he carried his he didn't go light at him at all. So I do believe that he have the ability, speed, stamina. He looks to me on paper at least. He's the long speed. He can go wire to wire. He's not a horse that needs to be in the lead. He can sit. He's very versatile. So I do actually think that he will be the 13th Triple Crown winner. We've seen a period in history where in the 70s we had three in only 10-year period. I think we can definitely, God willing, on Saturday we'll see that.
You are more qualified than anybody to speak on the talents of Bob Baffert. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and his ability to get these horses to run back in 2 weeks and then 3 weeks and maintain their condition?
I think there is, I mean, okay. So I'm just, as you know, I'm very transparent and straightforward guy. There are two Bob Bafferts, the pre-heart attack Bob Baffert and the Bob Baffert of now. And why do I think that is an absolute turning point in his career, not only as a person but as a trainer? Because it addresses the issue of being the vulnerability of a human being, how vulnerable you are. And I think it totally, he took that and actually dealt with it in a way that he looked at his own kids, meaning his own athletes, his own stars, the American Pharaoh, the Justify, the others as the same way. What is the vulnerability? How these horses could be vulnerable? And he addressed that to his science right now. He have it down to an art where, as a conditional, not only he micromanage every single detail of their life. Bob is, he trains every day differently from his gut. He looks at the animal and asks him to do every day different from the day before based on what he's seeing, and he's able to adapt. And as the sport have adapted, as the breed have adapted, as the distance have adapted, as well as the different demanding shipping from one track to another, he have adapted very well. So he got it down to an incredible art as a trainer, but he's so much in tune to understanding what could be the weakness and how could I address it. So I think he got it now down to a pure program where his horses are geared when to peak or not to peak. Of course, you've got to get, have to have the right horse. Not every horse can do what Justify have been doing. But I think if anybody right now is the, the magician of getting that done is Bob Baffert.
Indeed. And if I could circle back real quick, Karen, I didn't, I forgot to get your impressions of Justify, if you have any thoughts on his chances on Saturday.
Well, I think Big Sandy is a different track, and it'll be so much fun for him. He's a big horse, a powerful horse, and he's got the weight, and I think that he's got the team. And I wish Windstar the very best and our industry the very best, because it would be good for everyone involved.
Indeed. Well, I'm going to.
I want to say something about Belmont at the track.
Okay,
go
for it.
I've learned a lot of what the tailors just say about Belmont, and I think that people always say that, yes, it's deep, yes, it's big. Sandy, yes, the Belmont is the test of champion because of stamina, but I also do believe that speed helps you, and it's not necessarily a track that speed is your friend here. You don't have to close into it. It doesn't. If you're able to relax and able to go the way you need to go, it will carry you a long way. I remember Painter. Who was only his fourth start, a very, very lightly raced horse also. He almost went wire to wire until, you know, at the wire he got nibbed. But I do believe that, you know, that everything will be going. It's for the only one who can be Justified that day is probably Justified.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I agree.
Sure, go ahead.
This is Mickey. I agree with on that. That it's his race to win, but it's also his race, you know, to lose. I don't think any of the other horses are within three or four lengths of him. And if it comes up being a good racetrack, hopefully, you know, everything will get done and the stars will be in the right order.
Let's go to the media and see what questions they've got. Leanne?
And as a reminder, it is star one if you would like to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Paul Bowman with Goldmark Farm.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We hear you, Paul.
Okay. Justify has had fewer starts than any of the Triple Crown winners. If he wins, should he have an asterisk next to his name? That's for anyone.
Well, this is Mickey. He probably should, but probably what the asterisk next to his name should be is audible. They're not going to run, you know, the same owners own him, and they're not running audible. That's where it's going to be.
This is Ahmed Zayed. I don't understand the question. What do you mean by asterisk? What does that mean?
When I look at the race records of all 12 Triple Crown winners, I'm struck by the fact that Whirlaway and Citation each won 32 races, which is more wins than starts of the last four winners. Justify has had so many fewer starts than any Triple Crown winner. And I'm really reflecting, perhaps, on the fragility of the horses that are running now, as opposed to Whirlaway, for example, who ran 60 times in his race career.
Noted, and I think that it's, for me, as I don't think I am a historian enough regarding the history of the Triple Crown to go that far back to be able to make applicable comparison between 1 year to another. And, you know, all I can tell you is that, the field sizes were completely different. At some point it was limited to 12 and even less. These horses are running against 20 horses. One can argue it's even harder to win it than before. It was much easier, granted that they have ran more races than before. For me, I'm really not qualified to answer this question, so I don't want to say something that is not either smart, but all I can say is that I enjoy every single race. I enjoy every single class and athletes, and it's wonderful to celebrate them, but it's very, very hard to compare between your best kids. They're all special.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
And we'll take our next question from Louisa Barton with Fox Sports Ocala.
Yes, this question is for Mr. Zayat. Mr. Zayat, I just want to tell you how much I admire you and what you did with American Pharoah first, and just keeping him racing the way you did was so good for the sport, and we certainly hope that Justify has a Triple Crown win as well. My question for you is, other than him crossing the finish line and winning the Triple Crown, what would one really memorable moment that you would share with us be through American Pharoah's career?
First of all, thank you very much for your kind word. I honestly felt humbled and blessed by why us. We've been very short time in the special sport, and we were able to breed and race a Triple Crown, and I felt that he really belongs to the people. We've been waiting for 37 years, and I genuinely wanted to open our door, and Bob Baffert and his crew did an unbelievable job for not turning anyone away to come and see him and take a picture and pet him and play with him. So it's something that I felt it's an appropriate thing for us to do for the industry and the fans. In terms of racing him, I also promised myself, as long as he's healthy and he's sound, why deprive the sport of stars? Saying that, we all retire our horses very early because of the money, and I had to retire him at 3, and I honestly felt very kind of guilty about it. Maybe I should beat him another year, but already I have made my stallion deal or breeding rights deal with Coolmore, and I had to honor my agreement. But it's something that I felt that if it's then my decision and in my hand, I want to keep racing him. As to answer your question directly regarding the fondest memory, he was so special that every time we are next to him, it made us happy, and he had this effect on making us all better people. I know it sounds corny and weird, but all of us were nicer people, from Bob to me to Jill to Joanne's wife to my own kids. I mean, it's but perhaps the most incredible memory I had was actually in his defeat, in when he was beaten in Saratoga. I know Saratoga rallied, and the crowd was so much into it to have him race at Travers. And I know that I didn't know, have I squeezed the lemon too much? Did I do the right thing by him? And I was so protective, and I was very, like, shocked that he lost. And that moment for me, where I looked at my wife and I actually cried, I have to admit, and she did, and we looked, and I wasn't sure what am I going to do. Am I going to retire him? Should I keep him going? And I had the memory of the highs, meaning all his unbelievable win, but that's the time that I questioned myself and my judgment. Am I doing right by the horse? He always has to come first, and that's the memory that will always kind of haunt me about his career.
Well, we're all very thankful that you carried on the way you did, and I think the low of the Travers will just make the movie all that much better when they make it.
Bob and I, Mr. Zayat. My pleasure. We had a huge sigh of relief when he won the Breeders' Cup Classic and went out on a high note as the champion he deserves.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Looks like we got one more question.
And we'll take our next question from Mark Hansel with Northern Kentucky Tribune.
Yes, this message is for the Taylors. Penny Jennery described the week before the Belmont as Hell Week, I guess, because the expectations were so high and this had been so long since we had a Triple Crown winner. Can you recall what that week was like for you? You guys really seemed to just embrace the experience.
Yeah, it was a tough week, especially being undefeated. Everything just has to go right. when we came back from Florida, and, you know, we ran in the wood at Aqueduct, and, you know, you were uptight. I mean, everybody comparing you to Secretariat, and, you know, the thing about it is SLU is still the only Triple Crown winner that was bought at public auction for $17,500. And that was probably the biggest topic around, is how can a horse, you know, he's not a homebred and or by a, you know, a fashionable farm or whatever. So, you know, you had to go through that. And if that question you had to answer, you know, 50 times every morning. And, but, you know, everything for SLU, everything went according to plan. Billy was happy with him. He came out of the Preakness, you know, in good shape, and everything, you know, fell into place. But the closer you got, you know, you're still, you don't know if they can run a mile and a half until they run a mile and a half. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think that week was so exciting for me, because I just knew that he loved his track and he loved New York, and he had so many fans that were so happy with him. And he had such courage and heart and determination, and he loved to run. So I knew, and he didn't want anything in front of him ever. So I did know that if everything could go right, he and the racing gods were with you, and you could have racing luck, that he was a great horse, and that he would do anything asked of him.
Great. Thanks very much.
Well, I'll jump in here. I think that's all for the questions from the media, but, you know, as long as we're talking about all the things that can happen the week of the Belmont, Mr. Zayat, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your beef with Jim Gaffigan yesterday. That was, you know, a serious topic, but still somewhat amusing to see you guys going back and forth on Twitter. What about what he said on CBS Sunday Morning got your goat?
You're really going to let me talk about that?
Please.
First of all, I did not go back and forth on tweet with him, because I would not. He have 3.1 million followers, and all of them came to attack me. I think I received something around 1,800 tweets, which is like,
oh my gosh.
No, I felt absolutely a person who I needed to speak for my horses, my jockeys, my fellow owners, my trainers. I think that, you know, this is a serious week for all of us. We are all dreaming and hoping for a Triple Crown. And sometimes that even if you're a comedian, there are certain jokes that need to be tasteful and off color. And a program like CBS, Jane Pauley, I have tremendous respect for her and her colleagues. And I felt that to literally taint the entire sport by making fun everything from the athletes, I mean the jockeys, that they risk their life all day, to calling people that they're, I don't know, wearing their hats when they're leaving a trailer, and kind of saying that you're abusing the animals by whipping them, and all the things that I knew can take apart any sport, was totally off color, done in a very mean-spirited way. And I felt, hey, I'm an individual, a person, I have my own rights, and I happen to think that this person, I don't care how popular or not popular he is and how many people are going to come and crucify me, I'm going to speak my mind. That is not what our sports is about. It's not about gambling. It's not about this kind of stereotyping people and almost being bigot-minded about it. It's racist. I can see a lot of things, and I really don't want to go on a tangent on it, because people are apologetic sometimes in our sports and don't stand to the right and say, hey, if somebody in the mainstream media speak bad about us, we let it go, and it doesn't matter because, you know, that's kind of people are entitled to their opinion. Of course they are. And it's America, and it's, you know, we all have our opinion, but opinions are opinions. You could be wrong and could be wrong and right, and people need to be educated. And as such, we are a member of our sports. We should educate people about it. It's as simple as that.
Well, your passion for the sport and for your horses is evident and always has been, and I think a lot of people did get educated yesterday, thanks to you rising to the defense and encouraging others to do so. So before we end, though, maybe on a lighter note or a more positive note, I guess my last question is where will each of you watch the race on Saturday, and what will you be doing during this Belmont? Mr. Zayat, you want to go first?
First of all, I would like to pay compliment to the tailors. I have never had the privilege of meeting them or speaking to them. I can see the passion and the love to their horses, and they still remember all the details being, you know, long ago. And it's something that makes me feel wonderful about our sport. And I want to pay them the compliment that they deserve. And thank you very much for believing in Seattle Slough and the fun that brought us. I will be watching with my family. All of us, regrettably, are going to be overseas for a family wedding that have been, you know, decided on 8 months ago. I didn't plan that day.
Yeah.
We'll be rooting from overseas. We're all going to be there. And I'll be rooting for Bob, for Winstar, for all my friends, for another Triple Crown.
Karen and Mickey?
I thank you for the compliment, and it goes both ways. You've been very, very good for your sport, and so is American Pharoah, and we're very proud of all of you. Your whole family, and I'll tell you, I think the most important thing about the Belmont is for Winstar and the Baffert team, all of them to have the best day and to enjoy it and to make history and to have just a wonderful, wonderful experience, because it only comes once in a lifetime. And, well, maybe not for Bob, but for
terrific. And where will you all be on Saturday?
We're going to be in Sun Valley, and we'll be watching. And I have a big painting of Slough, and we have a little routine that we do. And so, yes, we'll be very happy and have friends in.
Terrific. Well, Karen and Mickey, and
for the business and for the Triple Crown.
Well, isn't that for sure? Karen and Mickey, thank you so much for your time. Mr. Zayat, you as well. This has been an amazing hour and 20 minutes, and it's really been a great reminder for me, and hopefully for others, of how special these weeks are, and how you never know how long it's going to be until the next one. So hopefully everybody enjoys it, and thanks again to all our guests for coming on and sharing their memories. And if anyone has any questions on how we can help with their coverage, feel free to contact me. Thanks, everyone, for participating, and I'll send it back to the operator, Leanne.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.